Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session for the Mesa City Council for Monday, July 8th, 2013. Councilmember Summers, you on the phone? Okay, I think he's going to try and join us by phone, and the Vice Mayor will not be with us today. The first item on the agenda for today's study session is to review tonight's regular council meeting agenda. And if we could, because of some time constraints and not constraints but conflicts, if we want to skip right ahead to a portion of item 5G, I believe it is. And Lisa? Oh, there you are, right there. This is calling a special bond election. And as you recall, we had three items that we were talking about putting on public safety streets. And then there was a proposal from the Mesa Historical Society and Group as far as a spring training extravaganza, or whatever we call it, experience. I'm sorry, it started with an E. What? And Lisa met with Mr. Brady and me late this afternoon. And I think you have something that you'd like to talk to the council about.
Well, first of all, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Brady and Council. We really appreciate the opportunity to have these discussions with all of you and appreciate your support. This project, the Arizona Spring Training Experience and Cactus League Hall of Fame, has a great deal of potential, as we've all recognized. And after discussions with several of you and with other partners in the community, we've determined that there is a tremendous potential to develop this project beyond even the scope that we've presented to you thus far. We think that there are new opportunities that have just come about even this week that we'd like to explore further. And so we're asking that we table the vote to put this project on the 2013 ballot initiative, but that we work together to do this at a future time, possibly next year.
Okay. Any questions for Lisa? And just so you know, I mean, I had the opportunity to talk with Lisa and some others this afternoon when she called and talked to inform me of this. And I was really excited about the fact that the historical looked at this as an opportunity to do something, I think, bigger and better. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that the time frame we were trying to squeeze this into was a little bit short.
Yes.
And that we would probably be better served and getting a better project and be able to tie up some loose ends more if we went for it. So I appreciate you guys' willingness to step up and do something that I think will be better for Mesa in the long run, because I think we're going to have a killer project. And I fully support that. And I think what we'd love to do is start working on that immediately.
Yes.
To come up with a detailed site plan and a vision and a plan that we can take out to the public, and you can take out to the public, and we can take it out with you, and that will be great for city and for that area.
Yes.
Okay, so we will then not include, that'll be eliminated, the spring training will be eliminated from the item 5G.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lisa, and good luck. We appreciate Lisa coming in. She had a conflict and asked to come in first off, so we appreciate that. Yes, Councilman Cavanaugh.
Thank you. I just have a question, probably for Ms. Spinner. In terms of calling the special bond election tonight, are we finalizing the language and list of projects as it will be on the bond election, or is that something that you will still be working on the wording of?
Yeah, we are intending to go forward, if council approves the resolution, go forward as is. If you have changes you would request to the language, please let us know and we can make those changes tonight. Otherwise, we will go with both the resolution and the ballot language that is presented in the packet.
And I guess the only suggestion I would have would, again, going back to the Mesa Fire and Medical Communications facility, my preference for voter understanding would be to designate it the Mesa Fire and Medical Dispatch Center. I know what we're talking about is providing additional capacity, redundancy, and things like that, but those don't resonate real well with voters. Voters want specifics, and I know they're voting on a list of public safety projects within the public safety bond category, but I guess I would ask colleagues to consider identifying that particular project more specifically, as we have in the past with acquiring land for Fire Station 203 or Fiesta District, substation, things like that. I think it's having wording like this is going to be more clear to the public what we're talking about. That's the only comment I have. Thank you, Mayor.
So would the suggestion be only to say Mesa Fire Dispatch Center?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what the specifically, or was it communications type? So I mean, I thought the idea was to give some flexibility, though, also. And I want to make sure we're not tying things so closely that we're limited in scope as to what we might do if we get down to the point and we want to stay within the same realm. Of course, I'm not saying do it totally different, but to stay within the same realm of giving the fire as much flexibility as they can to design the center, communication center, that they need.
Right, and Mayor, I wasn't intending to narrow that scope, because of whether the site or the type of building or, but I think it's helpful or descriptive that, I mean, it is a Mesa Fire Medical Dispatch Communication Center, if you want to call it something like that. Again, we're not saying what the building looks like or where it should be.
I'm going to function, not to form.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at trying to better explain to voters this is what we're asking them to approve.
So, if I might, Mayor.
Go ahead.
Councilmember Kavanaugh, if you would like, on question number one, we'll read through it. And then when it starts, which may include but is not limited to fire stations and fire and medical dispatch centers, comma, support. Or we'd actually say fire stations, comma, fire and medical dispatch communication center, comma, support equipment. Is that what you're looking for?
Perfect.
Is it dispatch communications slash communications? I would.
Whichever you would prefer. Yeah. Whatever you think is most accurate.
Richards? I think my only question is how might it affect the limitations of the use of the building if it's purchased under a public safety bond question, say something changes and we want to use part of the building for utility bill collection or something.
And that is one of the reasons why we added the may include but it's not limited to, because we wanted to provide the council flexibility and yet still inform the voters of the project.
What our plans are now.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And putting the word fire and medical, what if police ended up using part of that building? Does that affect it in some way? Does it preclude police from being able to use that building if we put fire medical on it? I mean, does it all just roll up in one big happy public safety family?
I'm not sure I can give you. I think we would probably be okay. Obviously, the intent, what you were saying, is today the
probably
plan is
be okay. How do we get to we will be okay?
then we put in here exactly what you intend to do, but I think that the issue is that the council at this time doesn't know exactly what would be included in that building. It will include, if a new building is built, it will include fire and medical dispatch slash communication. But again, the language says may include, but it's not limited to. So we will still be able to use that building, if it is a building, for some other purposes, but one of
so
the
specifically,
main purposes.
To specifically answer Councilman Richens, yeah, if police was going to use it, based on what you just said, absolutely, that would be acceptable.
You're fine.
I mean, that's not our plans right now. That's not what's presented. But we get it that things change. We may find that there's some additional use. We can have multiple people in there, and we're not limited to doing that.
Why are we worried about what we call it then?
To give it.
Does that matter? I mean, if it's under...
What would be some of the other options? You can certainly use... The intent is obviously to inform the voters of what the bond funds will be used for. It doesn't have to be dollar for dollar with these projects, but this is the intent of the council that you will be utilizing.
And I think where Dennis is coming from, that word communication center is very generic. Is that what you're looking for? Okay. So trying to...
So I think Debbie really hit it on the head, because it's just I want to be able to go explain to voters here's what the primary purpose of what this bond package is, and that's a specific that I can tell them.
So, Mayor, Councilman Kavanaugh, two things. one of the things we try to do in the ballot language is be fairly broad while still informing and keep that flexibility, because that's the legal document. But on the other hand, I think even to Councilmember Kavanaugh's point, in the publicity pamphlets, the informational packets, we'll get even more detail, almost like the descriptions that were provided to you.
Another option is, if you wanted to broaden it, you could say public safety dispatch / communication center.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd actually like to keep fire, because fire is it. Voters like fire.
Oh, sorry, Chief. You didn't mean
with
it.
With all due respect to my friends in the police department.
Wait, okay, now.
Fire
yes,
department
yes,
gets the
yes,
votes.
Wait a second. I want you to look out there, and I love my fire, but I also recognize the only people carrying sidearms out there are not the firefighters.
I think I'd go with public safety.
Councilor Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. Debbie, I have a question for you, too, and maybe everybody else, but we say center if we don't actually... You do a brick and mortar or redo a building, but we do something more flexible. Or are we able to still? Is it still covered?
It is still covered.
Okay, yes. So it's not
the way the way it's worded does not require that you build a separate building. It doesn't preclude you from building a separate building.
Okay, great, thanks.
All right. So what do we decide on?
Last I heard is that we will go with fire stations, comma. Fire and medical dispatch.
Sure, we don't want to say public safety stations?
Whichever council would prefer.
Fire stations is fine.
Okay, so we'll do fire and medical dispatch / communication center.
Sure. Okay, I think we're fine. All right. Okay, we'll have a chance if there's anything else. Is there? Well, as long as we're on 5G.
Yeah, we're there, so.
Is there anything else? Okay. Let's go back to page 2 then. Items 2 through 4A, items 4B through 4D, items 4E and 4F, items 4G and 4H,
You want to? Can I get somebody up here to say that word?
Gas chromatograph triple quadruple.
Items 4I and 4J.
Is it triple quadruple? I mean, like, isn't that like 3 and 5? I mean,
it's a big box.
Yeah. Okay, 4I and 4J. Items 5A through 5F. Items 5G, and by the way, with that wording, I better not hear someone from fire medical come back and say, you specifically said this, this, and this on that day. So I hope that's in the record now, okay? Because that's one thing Councilmember Kavanaugh, I'm a little concerned with, is I get it with the voters, but the fact of the matter is that as was presented to us, this was an evolving issue that we agreed on the concept and on the need to provide this, but I think what was presented to us was that the final form had not yet been decided because technology, there's a lot of factors that are coming in that will impact how this is taken forward. So I want to make sure that by putting that language in there, we have not boxed ourselves, and we're going to have a line of people going, you said you'd do, from the fire community saying we agreed on a specific thing, when what we're trying to do is give the fire medical chief, you guys, flexibility to design to your needs and to design what you need will be the best for us as a city and as a regional leader going forward. So I just want to add that to it, because sometimes that comes back to bite you. So, which is another reason why you give that flexibility. Items 6A through 6C. Items 6D through 6G. Items 6H through 9A. Mr. Wesley.
Mr. Mayor, with regard to item 6H, we had communication from the applicant on that case today requesting that this be pulled from the agenda so he can work with staff and see if he can't make some of the modifications necessary to get a positive recommendation.
Okay, so item 6H is removed. It didn't continue. This is removed until further notice? Or continue? Well, it's removed. Okay. So when we come back from break, we'll see how that works out. All right? Okay.
Mayor, can I just clarify again? I know, apologize, we can go back to 5G, but just the amount initially, well, up till today, it was posted at $147.9 million. So we reduced that down to by 17.1. So I just want to make sure, because we've got to get this in the resolution, we will be at $130,800,000. Candace, are you okay with that number? Okay, I just want to make sure we're...
And references to spring training, whatever...
That's
extravaganza.
Well, specifically, it'll be just for the streets amount, and the public safety will be the only two questions on the ballot.
Yes. Everyone agrees with that?
Okay. Just want to make sure we're all in alignment with the right number, so when that gets approved, that's what's on the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. The next item is to hear presentation, discuss, provide direction on utility service lines warranty programs.
Great. Good afternoon, Mayor, Council members. My name is Keith DeVore. I'm a management assistant with the Water Resources Department, and I'll actually be partnering with Ed Quedens today on utility line warranties. We also have a representative from SLWA, Brian Davis, who's in the audience in case there's any further questions on any specifics of the program. So the reason we're here is my former boss, Catherine Sorensen. She, former boss as of today. She gave a presentation to the SAC committee a few weeks ago, and at that time the committee directed that staff bring back this presentation for a full council direction on the program. So just a little bit on how utility line warranties work. There are several companies that offer insurance programs to property owners that provide some level of coverage for water and sewer lines that are the responsibility of the homeowner. How it would work is the third-party vendor would have a mailing campaign letter that they would send to each resident, and if the homeowner decided that they wanted to sign up with the warranty company, they would pay a fee, in which case they would receive repair services under coverage in the event of a problem with the service line. This fee is typically about $5 to $10 per month, and that would be for each utility that the homeowner signed up for. So if they signed up for water, it would be $5 to $10 a month for water. If it was for sewer lines, it would be $5 to $10 a month for sewer lines. Anytime you talk about warranties, you have to talk about coverage. And what we found is that what usually is covered are the underground service lines from the point of the connection at the city main to the meter or the exterior of the foundation of the homeowner. What would not be covered would be any other lines, such as fire lines, spas, pools, etc., damage by homeowner, third party, natural disasters, or any breaks inside of the house.
Mayor, council members, so this program is being brought to us through the League of Cities. Service Line Warranties of America is the vendor that's partnered with the League and has approached the city about a contract. The League does market the following benefits: no cost for cities, affordable rates, repairs made by local contractors. Our involvement in the program would be to allow the use of the city name and logo. The vendor contract with us would provide compensation two forms. One would be a flat fee based on our number of residences that they're reaching out to, and a second would be a royalty based on the number of products sold. The reason they offer the compensation is for the use of the city's name and logo, and it supports the citizens of the legitimacy of the program, which they hope will result in more enrollments. So the options we bring forward to enter into this program, Phoenix and Avondale have done a non-exclusive licensing agreement. As we've done the research, this is the option that we're currently recommending if the council decides they're interested in moving forward with this program. We also have two other options. We could piggyback on a cooperative contract out of North Texas. And another option would be an RFP. And the three options are basically open to us. So we're here for direction on whether or not the council is interested in pursuing a warranty program.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I serve on the board of directors for National League of Cities, which is strongly promoting this program for its member cities. It's proven a pretty good success in the communities, both large and small, that have done it. Many residents don't understand where city responsibility ends and their own liability begins. And this is a program like the prescription card program that NLC has worked and vetted very carefully with the companies that do business with it. I think it provides a good benefit for residents. There's an opportunity for some royalty monies to the community, and each community kind of decides how it wants to allocate those funds, whether it's educational programs or environmental programs. There's a whole host of areas that communities have used those royalties for. And my hope is that we would join Phoenix and Avondale and many of the other cities around the country to explore this. I appreciate the staff's recommendations on the options.
The non-exclusive licensing agreement that Phoenix and Avondale, those also have revenues going back to them?
Yes, they do. They're structured the same as the North Texas. There's no difference in the way they're structured, if I'm understanding that correct, Ryan. But they just approach the relationship in a different way.
Is the by putting our logo on this, Debbie, what kind of ownership do we have now of the program and of the problems that go with it and the benefits that go with it?
Well, I think that is not entirely clear, because in the cases, the cities that have used it, it hasn't been challenged or we haven't had the issue. The potential problem would be, the company says they're using our logo to show legitimacy of the program. So is there confusion that the residents believe that this is the City of Mesa program, so that, you know?
Well, I think the idea is that they don't want confusion. They want it.
Believe it is the City of Mesa.
Yeah, so, and I think that's what we're selling. And if we're getting money for it, it basically does become our program, right?
So 10 years down the road, if the company no longer exists, but somebody's been paying their insurance premiums all this time, and then there is a breakage, and they go to collect for the insurance company, and they're not there, they would look to the City of Mesa potentially.
What kind of protections are in the license agreement relating to that kind of an issue? Meaning, Debbie raised two issues. The first, but the one I'm dealing with is the company is unable or has a problem providing the services.
And Mayor and Council, this is Kelly Gregan from my office, who's been working specifically on this program.
Mayor and Council members, I think one of the things we're still looking at is what we would like to see as a part of that licensing agreement in order to ensure that that doesn't take place. One of the reasons that staff has recommended that the Avondale and Phoenix model is better is it gives us more leeway in order to decipher the terms that we want in that particular contract versus piggybacking off of another contract.
And I hate to put you on the spot, but I would assume that I'm not the first one that's raised this issue. So I would expect that some kind of clause, some kind of protection or something, whether there's a bond or whether there's something else that's in there that would protect the city from this case. Have you seen that in the agreements?
Yeah, in the Phoenix or the Avondale contract, is there a bond requirement or is there a clause?
Off the top of my head, I don't believe that there is, but that would be something we would want to ensure is in our contract.
Yeah,
which is why we would prefer that.
If our name's on it, it's our program. Mm-hmm. I don't care how we sell it. It's our program, and I don't ever want to get in the situation of us saying, well, that's not really us. It's a third party. No, it's our program. And that means that we better be willing to accept or protect ourselves against any of the downsides, especially if we're going to take fee revenue. I don't have a problem doing that, as long as we understand this isn't as simple as just, you can use our name. There's a reason why the company wants to use our name, because it has power. And it has power because it will entice people into signing up, and it may be the greatest thing in the world. But I just want to make sure that with that power also comes a responsibility that we are accepting. As long as we're protected on that, I don't have a problem.
Mayor, I was just going to say, and Ed or Kelly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Tempe actually does this. The city itself does it. They don't have an outside vendor, correct?
That's what I've heard, yeah.
So.
Okay. So, yeah, Councilman Richens?
As far as the, does the program bill the homeowner directly? Does it get billed on our utility bill? You know, because I noticed there's a monthly charge of some kind, if I ever...
It would not be on our bill directly. I'm not sure how the company would charge, but it would not be part of the City of Mesa billing. It would be through the third-party vendor.
Yeah, I'd like to learn more about how Tempe's doing it, too, if Tempe's doing it something. I mean, we have crews that are mobilized all the time fixing this stuff, and, you know, is it an enterprise for them? Is it a something that they're doing, you know, as a value add to their, as a service, you know, outside of, you know, because I know Tempe's going to be there for a while. I'm not sure. I don't know if this company, I mean, as infrastructure ages, you know, they could get a bunch of claims that sink the thing, and then what recourse do people have? They're going to turn to us. I agree with you, Mayor, that they're going to say, hey, you know, you guys put your name on this, so.
I like having the idea of having a third party. I don't know that I want to get in the digging, because usually if there's, remember, this is from the street, manhole, or the property line, basically, in. Usually what you have, what I've found, is that you have that collapsed line that suddenly shows up 5, 10, 15 years later. And I had a neighbor that went through this. There was a, you know, in construction, they chipped the line and it finally collapsed after 10 years. And before you know it, there's a backup. Well, the only way to fix that is to literally go out and dig up the front yard and replace that line. I guess we could get in that business. I like the idea of having a third party do that a lot more than I like having our crews going out and doing that.
I want to understand a little bit more about what they cover too. Do they cover, you know, digging out and replacing the whole thing? You know, does it cover, my house is 50 years old, my sewer line's imminent, its collapse is imminent at any moment, I'm sure, you know, so it's like $5 or $10 a month I'm in, you know, but I want to understand what those coverages are a little bit more, you know, and I think I want to understand what Tempe's doing, because you know, this is one company's proposal. You know, I haven't seen what else is out there in the market. The thing that does give me a lot of comfort is that NLC has vetted this, and having NLC vet it gives it a lot more level of comfort on for me. So,
Mayor, Council, this is Ryan Davis from Service Line Warranties of America, and he can answer any questions you have.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council members. I'm Brian Davis with Service Line Warranties of America. Just to quickly summarize and answer some of the questions you've had, we have an indemnity clause in all of our contracts where the city is held harmless. In doing business with cities for nearly 7 years and having almost 200 cities now in our program, we haven't had a situation where a homeowner has challenged a city. But we do also, we are required to put up a bond with the state, and I believe in Arizona it's through the Real Estate Commission. It could be, it's different in every state. It could be the Insurance Commission, but a performance bond.
Registrar contractors, probably?
That's...
Contractors, your licensed contractor, you probably, but it's a warranty program. Who knows who it's with?
It differs in some states call it a warranty, some states call it insurance. It is actually legally a warranty. One of the things that is a benefit of our program is that currently there are cities such as Tempe that's the only city I've heard of that's trying to do that. I'm in line with what Mayor Smith said, is that having a third party, Phoenix felt it was a lot cleaner. The city going on the property and digging raises, in Tempe, I'm sure they've looked at this as well, but it raises a lot of issues that could perhaps happen if you have the city going on property. And it also, our program, one of the strengths is that we would only use Mesa-based plumbers. And so instead of the city actually making the repair, the dollars go back into the local economy. So our program's proven to get around 30%. Oh, I just lowered myself. I feel very inferior now. This is why I didn't play baseball.
It's hard to feel inferior with this group, I tell you.
Okay, I'll keep my leg away from there. So what was I about to say? That's great, Brian.
30%.
I'm probably on TV. Okay, yes, 30% saturation versus a city that doesn't endorse our program, less than 2% of the households will have any type of service line warranty. The other thing is just the overall awareness of the program and just responsibility of those lines. Where does my responsibility stop? As a homeowner, until I found out about this program, I did not know. I was, I don't know how to sit in a chair, but I also know that when my service lines failed, I thought I could call the city and they'd come, you know, repair the line. And in Phoenix, we have already spent over $300,000 in a year on repairs and replacements. We will clear the line if it's backed up, to answer your question. We will replace the line if it can't be cleared. If it's broken, if it's dropped, if there's root intrusion, we'll clear through the roots. If that doesn't work, we'll replace the line. So if you look at a situation, you have a homeowner that wakes up one morning, and these things never happen when you win the lottery. They happen when your car's in the shop and your dishwasher breaks and now your sewer line's broken, and the plumber says, well, it'll be, you know, $4,000 to replace it. That's at no cost to the homeowner, minus their, you know, $675 a month that they're going to pay for the warranty. And now that $4,000 stays in Mesa's economy because we're going to use a city-based plumber. So it's a win-win. And then that royalty of 50 cents per product, it would be anywhere from $100,000 to $200,000 a year ongoing for the city of Mesa that they could put back and the city could put into any type of sustainability program, or Atlanta uses it for lower income housing to help pay for utility bills if they're delinquent, backed up. So I tried to jot down the questions. I'm sure I'm not answering some of them.
Councilor Richens.
Yeah, why don't you walk us through a couple of scenarios where you might cover something, where you might not? I think that's probably the easiest way for the public to understand.
Absolutely.
So you have a sewer line from the presentation, anything outside of the foundation of the home. And so say, you have a sewer line collapse, but what if that sewer line, runs through and under a sidewalk and in, what if it goes under a fence?
Right.
How do you handle those situations?
I'll answer the question by backing up just a step. We have, like I said, nearly 200 cities now in this program. We survey them every year to say, how are we doing? Because we know if we have to deny a claim, the reason we don't do that, and we do it less than 2% of the time, which is phenomenal, 98% of our claims are processed with no denials, is that we know that they're going to contact you if we upset the homeowner. And that's our job, is to make sure that doesn't happen. If it happened a lot, we wouldn't be doing this, and we wouldn't have Atlanta and Kansas City and all those folks. So what we do is we would cover, the only time we basically deny a claim is, believe it or not, this counts, if they stop paying us for more than 3 months. That's the number one reason we deny a claim. That's a big percent of that, less than 2% of the denied claims. The other thing that we would that we would deny a claim for is sometimes someone will flush a diaper or a toy down on a second floor. It would cause a backup. And at that point, it's not the lateral line. And so they'll say, oh, I have a warranty for that. And they'll call, and we'll have to tell them, remember, this is from the point where the city stops responsibility. We repair under the sidewalk, through the yard, into the slab, and we're the only warranty company that does this. We actually cover all the way until that line daylights. So if you can touch it in the house when it's going into the commode or when it's going into the sink, that's where our responsibility stops.
Do you cover the stuff under the foundation?
Yes.
So all the way into...
Right through this. And a typical slab leak is $1,800.
But that's something that you guys would...
We do cover that.
Okay. And so that's on the sewer side. What about... There's other lines that you guys have coverage
for? So water line is the only other warranty that we would provide for your homeowners.
So I'm trenching a new sprinkler system, and I hit my water line, and I call you guys, and you come fix it?
Well, if you don't tell us you hit it, then we would fix it.
Important safety tip there.
Good. I'm just throwing a scenario.
See, this is additional service they provide, how to get around the limitations of the warranty. We appreciate that.
I'll tell you that we go to the extreme to make the homeowner happy. For instance, in Phoenix, the first week we had the program, I say the first week. There's 30 days... you're covered 30 days after you sign up for the program, because the first 3 years we did this, we were doing 60% of our claims the day after the letters dropped. Obviously something was wrong with that line and they weren't doing anything about it, and we were on the hook for it. So they get $4,000, they pay $6, get $4,000 in repairs, and then that's
sounds
not
like
good
a
business
great deal,
right?
Yeah.
So we have a 30-day waiting period, and what happened in Phoenix is, after that 30-day wait was up, a homeowner called her plumber and said, I have a service line, I have a sewer line problem. The plumber came out and charged $4,000 to replace the line. It wasn't a plumber in our network. She didn't call us. And it's very rare that that happens, but it happened. And we said, okay, you know, our terms and conditions say you have to call us first. We cut her a check for $4,000. So we do not want, our number one goal is that a homeowner doesn't call City Hall, and it doesn't happen very often.
Okay. Councilman Hagan.
Well, we heard this presentation in Sustainability and Transportation Committee and thought it was a great idea, and that's why we brought it forward to a unanimous vote out of our committee to full council. So I would, are we making recommendations? What are we doing here? What did the word say?
Yeah.
I make a recommendation that we move ahead with the program.
Yeah, let's just make sure that in that agreement, and I don't want to start from scratch. We've got several examples of cities that have already gone through this. Just make sure there's proper, that we're covered, safeguards for the city. You know, once we stick our logo on anything, we own it. I just want to make sure that we're covered on the backside.
Mayor and Council, would you recommend we pursue the non-exclusive licensing agreement similar to Phoenix and Avondale, or the piggyback off the existing cooperative agreement?
What's the scope of companies that offer this service? I mean, I can't imagine you guys are the only company out there that does this. So,
we're the only company that is obviously backed by the National League of Cities and has hundreds of city partners. There are companies that send direct letters to homeowners without a city partnership, and it's caused a lot of confusion because they'll put the state of Arizona logo on the envelope and on the letter, and it says Maricopa County residents, our records show that you don't have a service line warranty. They haven't hit this area very hard. They've hit it a lot in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and there's a lot of state attorney generals that are investigating these companies. And the thing is when you go that route, and we have Mesa homeowners calling us because of the Phoenix letter, they found out someone has it in Phoenix, and they say, can we sign up? And our answer is no. We cannot send a letter to a homeowner in a city that doesn't partner us, and we can't sign up a homeowner in a city that isn't partnered with us, because our model is to let the city control the message, to let the city, you know, to use city plumbers. We can't build a city of Mesa plumbing network if Mesa's not in the program. So. And they extremely redline their letters. And what I mean by that, and some of you may already be familiar with the term, is they will send the letter to the very elderly and to the new parts of town. They're not going to send letters to the older neighborhoods that really need the work. Our program is inclusive to everyone. We send a letter to every owner-occupied.
That's part of the agreement, I would assume.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Councilmember Richens, before Catherine left, she did relay that she had been approached over the years by a couple different companies, but specifics I don't have.
Well, once again, it's a non-exclusive.
Correct.
Number two, I like the fact that it's got the NLC line on it, because we can go back to NLC if they miss it. This is their program, too. They own this program, too.
And as
so
a licensing,
I like being able to go back to them.
As a licensing agreement, then, too, we control who we allow to have access to that, so we would be able to set standards.
And there, I would assume the terms of the agreement with the homeowner are: you don't pay, your warranty ends, or is there a?
It's a month to month. They can pay up front and save 10% for a year, and they can walk away at any time.
And you can walk away anytime they don't pay, too.
Right. Well, we give them 3 months.
Yeah, but I mean, your obligation is keyed to the payment.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Right. Yeah, Debbie.
Mayor and Council, staff's recommendation is that we, if the Council wanted to pursue this, that we go towards the Phoenix and Avondale model, because we think it gives us more flexibility in terms of negotiating the terms that would better protect Mesa. So if Council wants to go forward, that would be our recommendation, but you can ask us to pursue or direct us to pursue any one of the three.
I would.
Sounds great.
Okay, then you got the majority here. Go ahead and move ahead with that, okay? Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed audit plan for fiscal year 2013-14. Ms. Jennifer Butman, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. Thanks for the opportunity to bring the audit plan for the coming year before you. I'd like to see if we could get some direction on both the content and the priority or the prioritization of the audit plan. The way it's presented is currently not prioritized, but the plan was brought forward from the Audit and Finance Committee as is, so if there's further direction, we can get that tonight. What I'd like to do is just talk a little bit about how we select how these audits get onto this plan, and then also why we chose the ones that we did without taking up too much time. Basically, in order to get on the audit plan, what has to happen is it either has to have risen to the top of our risk assessment, which is a citywide assessment of risk in every department that ranges from safety hazards to fraud risk and everything in between. There's a lot of different types of risk, obviously. Federal and state mandates, there are some audits that are mandated that we have historically done as a service to the city. We haven't done that since the changeover to where it's been council directed, but there have been some requests for that. Prior audit history, what have we audited before, what have we not gotten around to that was, you know, at least present on the risk assessment as being something that's auditable. Complexity of operations, if there's been a significant change in operations, technological advances, highly regulated areas are also prime audit candidates. Cash handling, obviously, is front and center for a lot of that always receives a lot of priority. Impact of potential findings on public perception, which I believe we have one or two of those on this plan, which is basically what would be the, if we didn't audit this and maybe close up some controls a little bit, what would be the risk to the city in terms of public perception if there was a failure of a control? So with that, the things that have risen to the top and made it to this plan are the city attorney's property and public liability trust fund and the system that they use to manage that fund. This comes out of concerns, not necessarily concerns, but just wanting to take a look at that process and make sure that there's adequate controls, because this is now interfacing with our new financial system at the city, and so the processes have changed and the systems have changed, and we want to make sure that that's a very large fund and that there are controls in place. Public defender contracts, this is something that's been on our list and just hasn't, we haven't been able to get to, and so I wanted to keep it on the plan. It's something that's sort of a straggler. It's managed out of the city manager's office simply because there's really nobody else to manage it, and therefore
nobody else wanted it, that's why.
It's sort of just one of those things. It can't be managed out of the court, obviously, for conflict of interest purposes, but and so it's been handed around for various people, and so what we want to make sure is there's a process in place. The last time we informally looked, there really wasn't a good process in place to manage those, so we wanted to take a look. Questions had been raised about that just because people don't know. Disposal of surplus property, that's something that comes up in every city as an issue. We've had presentations to council on that subject over the past year. It's kind of just risen to the forefront. We have now, the last time we looked at it, it was a very simple process, very limited ways that we could dispose of property. Now we have a myriad of ways given the technology and different avenues that have been made available to the city, so we'd like to look at those. The ERP system implementation is the largest project on this plan, and that involves taking a look at the processes citywide that have changed in response to the major transformation of how we process financial transactions in the city, and that stems in purchasing and in accounting and budget and all of the other pieces to that big complicated machine that runs the city finances. So we want to take a look and make sure that the new processes are as well controlled or better controlled than the old processes were, and so to protect the interests of the city, and also to make sure that the system meets the requirements that were set forth in the original request for proposal, which is, did we get what we paid for? And the next one is payroll, which is actually, in technically speaking, a follow-up from a prior audit, but it's been long enough now that a fresh, brand-new audit is really needed of that area. There have been significant changes in how we do payroll, which is a good thing, from the last time we looked at payroll, and so we really need to take another close look at that and make sure that all of the issues that we had addressed in the past have been addressed now. The next one, having to do with light rail project cost recovery, is just looking to see if we're capturing, and again, as a symptom perhaps of our new system, it isn't clear to everybody how and if we are capturing all of the reimbursable costs on that project. So we just want to take a look and make sure that we're not missing anything. Library is something that we had cyclically looked at maybe every 5 to 7 years prior to this, and we haven't looked at it in a long time. There have been a lot of changes, obviously, in how the library does business with all the budget cuts and the advances in technology, and just the transformation of library services in the City of Mesa have been tremendous. And that, of course, places them at a higher level on our risk assessment. Fire prevention is another one that has been on the audit plan a couple of years, and we just could never get to it. It was oftentimes an alternate that we just didn't have time for, and it had been raised in the past as issues with regard to their services that are fee-based, just to take a look at controls over that. Police off-duty employment program is something that we haven't looked at, and most cities that gets audited on some type of a regular basis, but we have never looked at it, and it's a high profile. When things go wrong in that area, it's not good for the City of Mesa, so we want to make sure we minimize any risk that, and we have no reason to think anything's going wrong at the City of Mesa, just to be clear, but we want to just take a look. Aquatics is another one that's kind of commonly a difficult thing to control financially. not a tremendous volume of dollars, but certainly not a lot of control over them either when you think about...
It's a very liquid situation, that's why.
Very liquid, yes.
Council well, usually underwater.
And there are a lot of, let's just say, entry-level employees that run the pools oftentimes. You know, we have basically, I mean, teenagers handling cash, anytime you have that, you want to make sure you've got some good rules in place for them to follow.
They're young and inexperienced, sort of wet behind the ear. Everyone's
moving right along.
It must be late in the afternoon on this 113 degree day.
Okay. The only other things we have on the plan are regular activities that go on in the office. In addition to the follow-ups of prior audits that were released over the past year, we also have basic assistance that we provide on request. These are generally short-term projects that don't require a lot of resources but are helpful departments. Fraud and Ethics Hotline investigations. Our office is responsible for managing the Fraud and Ethics Hotline reports that come in from a third-party provider. Calls are taken, reports are taken over the phone, over the internet, by email, and also by fax, and then they go into a third-party provider in the state of Georgia who then provides the information to us, and the caller does remain anonymous. But we are responsible for ensuring that all of those get adequately investigated. PCI, which is the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard Reviews, that's a review we try to get to annually. We didn't get to it this past year, so we want to make sure we get to it this year. That's just reviewing our credit card sites for compliance. And then any special requests that we might get from council or the city manager during the year that might alter this plan from the way it looks today, because obviously we don't always know what's going to happen over the next year when we try to lay out a plan for the year. But so with that, if there's any questions.
Okay, any questions? Any specific prioritization that any council member would like to move forward with? And we'll leave it up to you.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
You're the one that sees the risk. If we don't tell you about it, then we'll leave it up to your professional judgment.
And the reason I asked about that, if I may, is because there is obviously a chance that if we spend a lot of time on some of these larger projects, some of the smaller ones may not get done this year, in which case they would find themselves on next year's plan, like in all likelihood. So just to make council aware that with the we have a very small staff and we'll get to as much of it as we can. It's kind of an ambitious plan for the size of the staff that we have, but they were all things that came up. So
I think we understand that.
Okay.
Thank you. Appointments, boards, and committees. So moved. Motion by Councilman Kavanaugh, second Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Hear reports on meetings or conferences attended. Okay. Mr. Brady.
Mayor, I'm just going to have Natalie come up real quickly. We've done a year-end report. We do this every year. And it's we want to just make you aware of it in the community so that the council can share this with community groups, neighborhood associations. And so let's pull that up. Let's just go ahead and go into the one with Councilmember Glover. Do you have that set up? Why don't you explain what you got there?
I do. And as Mr. Brady pointed out, every year when we adopt the budget, we now do a community annual report. And basically what we try to do is highlight some of the innovations, projects, services that the city provides. We want to connect those efforts with the council's strategic initiatives, and then we want to also make sure that we're presenting the next year's fiscal budget. So that's basically what this report does. And every year we try to improve it just a little bit. Last year we went from a paper version to an electronic version. This year we've retained the electronic version. We've added lots of links that we're still working on to perfect before we actually put this out this week. But we also, and thank you to council for participating, we've created some vignettes, video vignettes for each of you to kind of present some of your points of pride for your districts. So as you go through this, there's a table of contents now, and just to help you understand, the idea is that people can very quickly look at this and jump to pages. So if they want to go to the About Mesa, they come there very quickly. There's different links that takes them to resources, and that's what we're doing. The other thing, and so we've got the city manager's message, we've got the council's strategic initiatives, we've got several projects that kind of went from committing to the projects to actually projects in construction and happening, and so we've provided those updates. And then we also have some fun facts, which are basically everyday services, but some interesting information about them. And then just to give an example of how these vignettes work, I'll go ahead and jump to Councilmember Glover's, which ends up on the main street for or open for business. And that's one of the themes you'll see throughout this publication is we really tried to kind of hit home at helping people to remember to come down and visit our businesses, especially during the light rail construction. But I'll go ahead and pull up this video.
Hi, I'm Chris Glover, and I'm proud to represent District 4 in downtown Mesa. Progress is happening everywhere in my district, highlighted by the ongoing extension of light rail, which will connect downtown Mesa and downtown Phoenix. The internationally recognized and award-winning Mesa Arts Center continues to bring top-quality arts and entertainment to Mesa. We also have three universities that have opened up campuses in downtown, making Mesa Arizona's new college town. Several new housing projects are also underway as local property owners have begun reinvesting in downtown Mesa.
Best project ever.
So, and then as you go through it, there's still more projects. The council's messages are kind of sprinkled throughout all of this. And at the end, you have the budget information. These are the fun facts. Go back to here. And then back to the budget. And we have the entire city budget, and it talks about the expenditures, and then it will also talk about the resources, and there's information in there for the public so they understand what those funds really mean and where they come from. So with that, just real quickly, I want to thank the staff for all of their help. Randy Policar in PIO helped all of you get your vignettes put together. Of course, Mark Cornell takes a lot of pictures and charts and makes it look like a nice professional document. We really appreciate that. Brennan Jernigan in the city manager's office was also part and parcel to this. He's here with me today, but he's been very helpful in putting together these links, getting the pictures, and helping with some edits.
And that will be available where?
We will, everywhere, we'll provide it to the council so you can share the links wherever. We'll put it on our webpage.
Yes.
Anywhere, anyone that wants it, we will be able, be glad to make that link for them. I'm sure the Republic wants to put it on their pages.
We'll be issuing a press release as well.
That'll come up. That'll be available when?
By the end of this week, we should have it ready to go.
All right. Yep. Great. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
And then, Mayor, just one last business point. I know you've all been waiting to hear this, but we will be going on summer break following the meeting tonight, and our next meeting will be Thursday, August 15th. Have a great summer.
Great. Okay. Right now, we are going to recess our study session and call to order the meeting for the East Smart Community Facilities District Number 1 Board. We have a few items that we need to take care of here. Once we're done with those, we'll adjourn that meeting, go back into the study session so we can go into executive session. Is that okay? All righty. So I call to order the meeting of the East Smart Community Facilities District Number 1 Board. First item on the agenda is items from citizens present. Do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
The second item is to conduct a public hearing on the following: the proposed fiscal year 2013-14 budget for East Smart Community Facilities District Number 1 Board. The hearing is open. Any questions or comments? Any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
Declare the public hearing closed. Next item is to take action on the following resolutions. Item 3A, which is approving the East Smart Community Facilities District Number 1 fiscal year 2013-14 final budget, and item 3B, levying upon the assessed valuation of the property within East Smart Community Facilities District Number 1, subject to ad valorem taxation 30 cents upon each $100 of valuation for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2014. We'll take items 3A and 3B as a single item. I have a motion to approve from Councilmember Glover, a second from Councilmember Higgins. Is there any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. There being no further business, meeting of the East Smart Community Facilities District Number 1 Board is adjourned, and I now call back to order the study session for Mesa City Council for July 8th. I have a motion to enter an executive session from Councilmember Glover, a second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are moving into